And welcome back to A View from the Couch. I am Rich.
I am Jen.
I have nothing fun to say in this intro, and I'm not going to sing to you, but we are talking about American Gangster today. This is the last of the Denzel's Not the Hero arc. Did I get that arc title right this time?
Yes.
Perfect. So third time's the charm. But we're talking about American Gangster. This is a movie that I thought I had seen before, but I guess I hadn't. I'd seen part of it before. Maybe I fell asleep on it. Jen, had you seen this movie before?
No, this was my first time watching this one.
Crazy. Okay, so well, technically first time for me too. I know I had started this movie at one point, and I remember up to a certain point, and I don't remember any of the rest of it. But now I can talk about it. So why don't you tell our loyal listener what this is all about, or who this is, who's involved, who's responsible for this?
All right, so this movie was directed by Ridley Scott. Mm-hmm. It was written by Steven Zaillian and Mark Jacobson.
Okay.
This has a whole bunch of people in there. There's a massive cast. I'm just going to go through a few of these here.
I'm excited to hear you try and say some of these names.
Gee, thanks. Denzel Washington plays Frank Lucas, the main person in here.
Right.
We also have Russell Crowe. The first one that you're probably going to laugh here is Chiwetel Ejiofor. I have no idea on that one.
I don't know exactly how to say that one, but I think it's Chiwetel Ejiofor, but I'm not 100% sure. Oh, wait, hang on. There's a pronunciation thing here. It's Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Okay. I wasn't that far off, but I still butcher names and I apologize.
Yeah.
We have Josh Brolin in here. And then everybody else is kind of like the side actors. So I'm just going to leave it there just because otherwise I could probably rattle off for about 10 minutes all the people in this movie.
Now, just so you know, just a point of clarification, you said that it was written by Steve Zaillian. And then also by Mark Jacobson. Mark Jacobson wrote the book on which this was based. Mark Jacobson wrote the book called Return of Superfly, which is a biography of Frank.
Lewis. A writer.
Right. Yeah. He gets a writer credit
in yep. this here. Yep.
Yeah. He gets a writer credit for the based on bit, I guess. So, yeah. Yeah, they're all right. This movie is chock full of people. I mean, we got Ruby Dee, we've got Cuba Gooding Jr., you've got Ted Levine. There's so many people in this movie. There's even a breakout
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba, yeah, pre-breakout Idris Elba in this. Like, everybody is in this movie. It's crazy. It's one of those movies that you don't expect to see like everybody and their uncle in, but everybody and their uncle's in this movie.
That's right. There's a lot of people in here.
Yeah. Yep. Good stuff. All right. Though.
Do you have a summary for us?
Absolutely, I do. When his mentor Bumpy Johnson dies of a heart attack in 1968, Frank Lucas takes over his mantle as mob boss of Harlem. He enters the heroin trade, going directly to the source in Thailand and smuggling the product into the U.S. via returning Vietnam War soldiers. Dubbing his 100% pure product Blue Magic, Frank sells it at a much more affordable price than the competition, which soon makes his operation the only one in town. Meanwhile, in Newark, New Jersey, aspiring lawyer Richie Roberts is a police detective who is alienated from the force for handing in $1 million that he and his partner found in the car of a mobster they were tailing. When his partner, who is also a junkie, dies from an overdose of Blue Magic, Roberts is put on the task force targeting drug suppliers in the area. This puts him in direct conflict with corrupt New York City cops, including police detective Nick Truppo. Frank begins to sell his drugs to dealers in the tri-state area, using other criminal organizations to assist in the expansion of his empire. He hires his brothers as his lieutenants, setting each up with a legitimate business as a front for his heroin trade. He also moves his mother to New York and marries Eva. Stressing the need to keep a low profile, Frank relies on his business operating just under the nose of those investigating the drug trade. A slip in judgment, however, leads to Frank falling onto Richie Roberts's radar. Frank attends Ali versus Frazier, the fight of the century, but wears an audacious fur coat and hat and has better seats than the Italian mobsters. Through a stroke of luck, Roberts' task force witnesses Frank's cousin Jimmy shooting his girlfriend, and he becomes their informant wearing a wire. Through this venture, the task force finds out about one final shipment of heroin coming from Vietnam, and they search the plane, discovering that the heroin has been smuggled in the coffins of dead servicemen. They get a warrant and raid the processing facility in Newark, leading to the arrest of one of Frank's brothers, and then eventually the other four brothers and Frank himself. Frank is offered leniency at his trial in exchange for his help in exposing corrupt police officers, and this arrangement leads to three-quarters of the New York DEA being arrested and convicted, while Nick Truppo, the thorn in the side of both Frank and Roberts, commits suicide at his home. Roberts has passed the bar while all this is going on, and he becomes a defense attorney, with Frank being his first client. While Frank is sentenced to 70 years in prison, he only serves 15, being released in 1991, where he and Roberts appear to have become friends. That's the slimmed down version of this movie.
This is a long movie.
Really slimmed down version. Yeah, this is a long movie. Never a snoozer, I don't think. I don't think that it really sags at all, but it definitely is a long ass movie. Now, we watched the 3-hour cut of this because that was the only one that we had available to us. The theatrical version is a good 22 minutes shorter. So
I am curious to see what they cut out of there. There is a storyline in here that I feel could have been cut out and we still would get the same story.
The Cuba Gooding Jr. stuff?
No, but that's another one. Maybe.
What did you think could be cut out of this?
I thought that Richie Roberts' story about the custody stuff.
Yeah, that could have been cut out too.
Because there was it came in just probably 2-3 different spots in the movie, but it didn't really add to the story at all. And yeah. I feel like that maybe would have even cut out a good 10 minutes even.
Yeah.
Of the total movie time. And it didn't add to what happened at the end at all.
No, it felt out of place. And it felt like what they were trying to do was show the two of them growing in their roles, which, you know, if that's what you're trying to do, the custody battle has nothing to do with that then. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. This movie is about, you know, Frank's rise and fall and Robert's, you know, fall and then rise, you know, like it's basically the story of polar opposites and their concurrent, like, you know, weaving of, you know, their webs and, you know, their lives. And again, like you said, it doesn't add anything to it. And it just extends the storyline. Maybe that's the stuff that got added in, but I don't know.
I'd be curious to know what was added. And I didn't have time to go look either to see what was the difference between the two cuts.
Sure. Well, let's get into this. Let's talk about this a little bit. Now, you had not seen this movie before, but I started watching it and I swear I had seen, I could have swore I had seen this movie before. The only things that I remember happened prior to when he kills Idris Elba's character in the streets. After that, I don't remember any of this movie, like any of this movie. Like, I will say this, that scene, I think, sticks out because it is ballsy. He walks up to him in the streets, brandishes a gun at him. The dude's like, what are you going to do? Kill me? And he kills him. Nobody says a word.
And there's tons of people around. There's lots of witnesses.
It shows the power that Frank has at that point, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I like that kind of development because it shows you it's kind of similar to Training Day in a way, although I think Frank is definitely benevolent where Alonzo Harris in Training Day was definitely more malevolent. You know what I mean? Because Frank's like out there handing out turkeys and being a part of the community and helping out and, you know, protecting people and that sort of stuff, even while he's poisoning them all with, you know, with heroin. But they have a different outlook on him than the people around Alonzo Harris. Do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was real life or if that was just played up to make him more sympathetic in the movie.
I will say this. I did some research on this, and this movie is almost entirely fictional. It's about 70% fiction, 30% real. For example, Frank was not released in 1991 first. He was released in 1984 first.
And then rearrested.
And then gets released in 91. Like, that's just the biggest thing, you know? Like, there's other stuff that's just, you know, like, Richie Roberts didn't have a kid. He doesn't even have a kid. So the whole, like, this makes...
That really adds nothing.
Yes. Yeah. It makes it even more bizarre that they made such a big deal out of that, you know? Like it doesn't add anything to even have the ex-wife or future ex-wife in there, you know? You mention it in passing and then just let it go. You know what I mean?
Right. I know to the scene you were just talking about where he goes up and shoots that guy in the head.
Yeah.
While my understanding is he did kill that guy, it wasn't like that.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't think so, no.
Yeah, it was, apparently the guy swore at him or something and he shot him four times or whatever. But yeah, it wasn't that blatant in the middle of the street type of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, so I think back to yours where he's portrayed as a kinder person. I don't know if that's true or not or if it was just... for the movie's sake.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know either, but it definitely makes him a more sympathetic character.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure why you'd feel sympathy for him, which is interesting, you know. I mean, like, well, I guess in all the best like movies where the bad guy is the hero, the anti-hero, you end up rooting for him, right? I mean, The Godfather. What they do in The Godfather, what the people in The Godfather do is horrible stuff. They do horrible things to people. And yet you're rooting for them in the end, you know, Tony Soprano, again, rooting for him in the end, you know?
Well, I was wondering too, do you think it's what you're talking about there? Or I was wondering too, if it's a little bit of Denzel Washington himself putting his own flair on that a little bit, that because he does typically play good guy characters. And I wonder if some of that's coming through also.
I don't know. I mean, I've read a couple of interviews, quotes from him now that say, where he says that he loves playing the bad guy, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's him or if that's the screenwriter, the director.
Okay.
I would think that if he likes playing the bad guy, he would just go for it, you know? Like he did with Alonzo Harris, you know what I mean? Like just completely unhinged, unleashed, you know, like manipulating and orchestrating everything from the background while he's, you know, while he's doing his thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this character, like Denzel is the centerpiece of this movie by and large. Like they want to make this about the Roberts character and the Lucas character, and Russell Crowe can't compete. Russell Crowe can't compete. I mean, he's a good actor and everything. His accent's terrible in this movie, by the way. His accent is horrible in this movie. But he can't compete with, like, this just... Denzel Washington has a presence. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a long shadow that he casts. And it's hard to overcome that, I think, for anybody, really. What did you think? I mean, like, out of these three movies, I'm sure we'll get into this more later, but I think for me, I feel like this is the one where he casts kind of the biggest shadow, where he's the centerpiece. Whereas, like, Training Day, you still had, you know, you had Ethan Hawke, who also cast a shadow of his own. You know what I mean? Like, not to say that Denzel's character wasn't huge in that movie, but like, Denzel kind of stands alone in this flick as head and shoulders above everybody else. Whereas, you know, he was kind of more on an even keel in the other ones.
Well, I feel like the story was written about him and the other stuff was just thrown in. Where Training Day, it's really, I think, more about Ethan Hawke's character coming in and experiencing what he experienced.
Okay.
Because you stay with Ethan Hawke through that movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, that he is kind so of a perspective think, character.
Yeah, I do think this story is more about Frank Lucas than anybody else.
Do you know what I found interesting? Both of the main characters in this movie have two first names. Richie Roberts, Frank Lucas.
Yeah.
Ah. I think it's interesting that the thing that gets him noticed, the thing that puts him on the radar, is the one time he lets himself go and he's like, all right, I'm gonna show out. You know what I mean? Like he's gonna wear the fancy fur that his wife got him, you know? And he's gonna go. I find it interesting that that one slip up is what puts him on the radar.
And apparently that is fairly accurate.
Is it?
That is where they notice, like, who is this guy? But it does sound like he did have quite a few of furs and stuff like that. He just preferred to dress a lot more casual.
Yeah.
But I think because it was a big fight and he was wearing this super fancy, and there's pictures of him, and that coat looks almost identical, that coat and hat, to what he actually wore in that fight.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that part of the story has some ring of truth to it. But yeah, just to slip up one time when you are so careful for this character, and I'm not talking real life, but yeah, for this character to be so careful and to, I feel like he did it more because his wife bought it for him and he was trying to make her happy. And so he wore it.
Right.
Then all of a sudden that's the downfall.
Kind of proves the point. Downfall. Kind of proves his point, doesn't it? I mean, like, where
it
he
does.
Because was it his brother or his cousin that is like dressing crazy? And he's like, you got to dress normal, you know, don't be flashy, dress normal. We're supposed to blend in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They make it a big point to point out that that's what he does. He wears what he wears to blend in. He has to look like he's legitimate. He can't look flashy. He can't look ostentatious. And the one time that he does that, he proves why you have to do that, why you have to do the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
What do you think about him going over to Thailand to find his own source for heroin?
Ballsy. But then again, I think that's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? What do I think of it? Like what?
Like that whole, how he set this whole operation up, I guess I'm going for that. He got his own source and then how he was using the military to get it back. And then that was his whole, you know, I mean, he came up with that. He went and found all the pieces and got them in place to make that happen.
Right. I think he's creative. But I also, as a military family member, I find it kind of disrespectful to smuggle heroin into the country in the caskets of dead soldiers.
I'm surprised that military members went along with it, but I don't know. I suppose you get some guy who doesn't have the best morals and you pay him enough.
Well, you got to remember, though, think about the time frame, you know, 1968. Vietnam War was, we were at the height of the Vietnam War, and there was a lot of disenfranchisement with servicemen, with the country in general, with the idea that we were at war and why we were there. I'd say it was probably a lot easier at that point to find people that would be willing to do something like this.
Sure.
just because of the position that they were thrust into. Just, you know, think about it this way. You've got people that are poor at home and their one chance to, you know, to make it might be the military. And then you join the military and you get sent over there to basically be a target, basically be, you know, there to fight for a year, wandering around in the jungle, getting shot at, you know, potentially dying. A lot of them did die. And there were a lot of people by 68, especially after the Tet Offensive in 68, where morale was broken. It was really seriously broken at that point. So.
Sure. That still has quite a few people that would, I think, be aware of what's happening to not say anything. So, I mean, for that to happen as long as it did, that's just, it's interesting to me. I'm Because this, I did do some looking at, because I'm like, okay, is this really how it happened? And again, this is something that sounds like it's a ring of truth. He did go over there. He was there for a month or two. He didn't have any contacts, and he just talked to people, found his own contacts, found somebody to buy from. He set it up. That is how they transported it back. Now, not all coffins were coffins with bodies in it. Some of them were like made with the false bottoms and then weighted. So they felt like there was bodies in it, is what it's sounding like. So it was kind of a mix of the two. And that is how it came back in to the United States.
Crazy.
It is really crazy. It's nuts.
It's amazing what happens when money drives everything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of money drives even more. But
I also think it's interesting the kind of the story about all the dirty cops. I mean, I couldn't find anything on if that was pretty accurate, and I don't know history in New York around that time if that does ring true also, to have so many cops that were dirty that would take money and look the other way, you know.
Mm-hmm. New York was a pretty much a cesspool in the 70s and early 80s. It didn't get cleaned up until started late 80s, early 90s. I believe this. I do. I haven't done any real research into it, but I believe it. Mm-hmm. Okay. I absolutely believe that. Yeah. Speaking of dirty cops, Josh Brolin's character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he didn't forget to go for the head this time, did he? Well, of course, he wasn't himself. Yeah, he wasn't the one going for the head in the other one, but this one, his character didn't forget to go to the head. Go for the head. But anyway, sorry. Anyway, let's talk about him though. He was interesting, but it felt like he was just tossed in, you know? Like he was there to kind of threaten both of them at one point or another. And then I did like that Frank got him a couple of good times, you know? Like the Thanksgiving Day where he blew up his cherished, you know, mm-hmm. his cherished muscle car. But it felt like the movie wouldn't have suffered had that not been in there either. You know what I mean? I'm thinking about like streamlining this movie. In my head, I'm streamlining this movie. And that's something else that I feel like you could just pull right out of there.
So how do you think then? Because I think it is important to know that he was paying off cops too. But mm-hmm. he wasn't necessarily paying off his character. So I suppose you could pull that whole story part out mm-hmm. and just show him paying off a few other cops. And then you've established that same concept.
That's easy. Yeah, that's an easy one. You just show him passing money to cops a couple times. There's a couple of sequences where like money's changing hands, drugs are changing hands. You show it changing hands to cops too. And you're mm-hmm. like, oh, cops are in on it. Oh, okay. I see. I gotcha.
Right.
And you've saved 20 minutes of the movie, you know?
Yeah. And again,
it could have been 2 hours long.
Yeah. The stuff with him and Richie Roberts, kind of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, him telling him to stay out of New York.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessary. Yeah, I don't know. I think I agree with you. I don't know if that character's storyline was necessary or not.
I mean, if you really want to spend more time with Roberts, you spend more time with him and how he is ostracized from his own police force and why that is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could do it that way. You don't have to involve the New York cops at that point. Although I guess putting a face on that corruption.
Maybe he was the one character that represented all of that corruption, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you are putting a face on it. You're making it more palpable. You're making it more like physically obvious. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure, that makes sense.
You have a boogeyman. You've got a villain, right? Or another villain. So I guess maybe you don't trim that. Maybe that's not something that gets cut. I don't know. I just don't like a 3-hour movie like this. I don't think a 3-hour movie is necessary, especially because some of the stuff you could just cut out, you know, some mm-hmm. of the stuff isn't necessary. And I would like to see that 2.5-hour version or 2-hour 35 minute or whatever it is version of it, because I feel like it might move a little more smoothly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do agree with you, what you said earlier, though, for even though a 3-hour movie, there was a few times that maybe felt a little slow, but I think that had to do with the stuff that we're talking that could have been cut out because it didn't really add to it. But yeah, there really wasn't. Everything was interesting. And, you know, what is this going to lead to and how is this happening? So it was easy to stay engaged with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't have a whole lot else to say about it at this point, but I do want to point out a couple of things here.
Okay.
Richie Roberts later in life, I think it was 2016. He's going to get convicted of tax crimes. So much for the good cop. Yeah, I was looking at it, and he, in April 2017, Roberts pleaded guilty to tax crimes after an investigation against him by the IRS's criminal division and investigators from the U.S. Attorney's Office. Uh-oh. Sorry. Now he's a former criminal defense attorney.
Oops.
Yeah.
The IRS will get you guys.
The IRS will get you. They got Al Capone. They're going to get you.
Well, not if they're doing their taxes right.
Right, right. Yeah.
Don't evade the taxes and you'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. Don't Wesley Snipes it and you're going to be okay. You'll be fine. Do you have anything else or do you want to jump into Jennifer's trivia tidbits?
I am ready to go to the trivia stuff.
So you're ready to do Jennifer's trivia tidbits, bits, bits, bits.
I can literally hear you echoing from downstairs.
Maybe I shouldn't even echo it. I could just do it and it'll echo.
I was going to say, or maybe just do it, but don't be so loud.
Okay. Now it is time for Jennifer's trivia tidbits, bits, 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 bits.
All right. So while filming on location in Thailand, Ridley Scott hired many extras from the local villages, some of whom were actual participants in the drug running operation of Frank Lucas during the Vietnam War.
Oh, fascinating. Really? Did he know? I wonder if he knew about that when he hired them or if he found out about it like in the process. That's fascinating. That's great. Okay. All right. What else?
This movie has 360 scenes filmed in over 180 locations. The filming took 83 days, 78 in the United States and 5 in Thailand.
Wow. Big production.
Not only did the real Richie Roberts serve as Frank Lucas's lawyer after he went into private practice, he is also godfather to Lucas's son. Isn't that crazy? That part like blows my mind. This guy was responsible for bringing him down and arresting him and everything. And then he became his defense attorney.
And his son's so godfather. What? Like, that's bizarre. That's absolutely bizarre. Like, so that is true. They're friends, right? They're friends.
Yeah.
Wow. Man, that's something else. Or were friends. I guess Lucas is dead.
But. Yep. He died in 19, I think it was. Frank Lucas was excited about the film. However, he admitted that only a small portion of the film was true and that much of it was fabricated for dramatic effect. Richie Roberts also was on film location stuff, and he also criticized the film for its inaccuracies and said it made Lucas too noble.
Say?
Yeah, so he kind of thought the same thing you were thinking there.
Yeah.
This is a little trivia tidbit that I found interesting because I was wondering what on earth was happening on screen when this was happening. But do you remember when he's in the coffee shop and he's pouring like insane amounts of sugar in his coffee? So this is actually a code to his bodyguards that were at the restaurant to keep an eye on what was happening when he was started pouring extra sugar.
Oh, weird. Okay. Huh.
I thought that was interesting.
That's subtle. I like that.
All right. And the next thing I have to go over is alternate castings.
Ooh, alternate casting. I love alternate casting.
So there's two for.
Oh, I was just saying, I love alternate casting because then I can kind of try and imagine what it would be like with a different actor in a certain role and kind of roll it around a little bit and get a taste for whether or not I would even like it. And then, of course, some of them, when you say stuff like Justin Bieber was, you know, supposed to be that, I can go, I can vomit in my brain automatically. But anyway, go on.
All right. So for Frank Lucas, there was two. We have Don Cheadle.
Maybe.
Or Will Smith.
No. I remember.
I don't think Will Smith would have worked.
No. I mean, I think Don Cheadle could have pulled it off because Don Cheadle is a fan fucking tastic actor. Like, he is amazing. He can do just about anything. But I don't think he has the presence that Denzel Washington has. And I think after seeing this and seeing the presence of, you know, Frank Lucas on screen, it's hard to imagine somebody else in that role. And Will Smith is too damn nice for this role. He's too nice for this role.
Yeah.
Too much of a nice guy.
For the part of Richie Roberts,
mm-hmm.
we have Joaquin Phoenix.
I would have gone with that 100 times. Yep.
Benicio del Toro.
I love Benicio del Toro, but I cannot see him in this role.
Can't Brad see this Pitt.
Role. I could see Brad Pitt doing this.
And Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta would have been fucking perfect. Ray Liotta would have been perfect. He wouldn't have had to fake the accent.
Yeah.
He would have been perfect. What happened with Ray Liotta? He did he just said, no, we want to go with the Australian guy instead.
I don't know. These are just ones that are put out there that were either considered or offered and turned down, but it doesn't give me details on to what the actual scenario was.
Wow. Joaquin Phoenix would have been great. But Ray Liotta would have been absolutely spot on perfect. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, what? Ray Liotta in 2007. Oof, man, a good 17 years after Goodfellas. Had a little bit of age on him. Fuck yeah, that would have been great. That would have been great.
And then Detective Truppo, alternate casting is James Gandolfini.
That would have been a good one too. Yeah, that would have been a good one too. I like Josh Brolin though, but I think that would have been good. James Gandolfini would have been good. That's it.
That's all I've got.
Yep. Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
Those are actually pretty decent ones, I think.
Yeah, those were really good ones. I mean, they give you something to think about. Like Don Cheadle could have pulled this off easily, but the presence I don't think would have been there necessarily. He's not as imposing of a figure, right? While he is a fantastic actor. I mean, Don Cheadle, have you seen Don Cheadle in anything other than Avengers stuff?
I'd have to look at his list. I don't know.
I mean, he has done some amazing things. Like he can really embody a role, you know? Like there was he was in Crash, first of all. Crash is the one where I first noticed him. But like he was in, and he's in Boogie Nights. That's right. It was not Crash. It was Boogie Nights where I first noticed him. He plays the dude that wants to be a cowboy in Boogie Nights, the porn star that wants to be a cowboy in Boogie Nights. He's great in that. There is a movie that he was in where he plays a British guy, and I cannot think of the name of it. But he was also in Hotel Rwanda. He was in Ocean's 11. I mean, he was in Family Man, right? That movie, that sappy movie with Nicolas Cage. But he plays the Clarence character in that. No? Anyway, he can do pretty much anything. He can do pretty much anything. And he's really, really good. So I could see him doing this movie. But again, he's just not, he doesn't have the cut. Do you know what I mean? That like Denzel Washington has. Like Denzel Washington looms large. Don Cheadle is kind of the subtle, you know, like a subtle character actor type actor. Mm-hmm. Where he's not actually a character actor, but he's got that affectation of a character actor. You know what I mean? Really good. Okay. Really good. That would have been a really good choice, but it would have been a very different movie, I think. And fuck, man, Ray Liotta would have been spot on for Richie Roberts. He would have been spot on. Whew, okay. All right. Anyway, did you like this movie?
I like this movie. I am going to put a little asterisk on it, though, and say I feel like it would have been a little better if we cut out some of the unnecessary storyline, but I still liked the movie.
I think I like this movie too. I really want to see the shorter version now, but I really like this movie. Like, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I fell asleep at that at some point. Maybe I was watching it too late the first time I watched this movie, but if I fell asleep, it was a travesty, because this is actually a really, really good flick. A really good flick. So now we're through the actual film talks for our arc. Next is going to be the SmackDown.
It is. Yeah. Next week we will decide which movie we're going to keep, which one we're going to rent, and which one we will erase.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you next week when we do that. Bye from the couch.
Thank you for listening to A View from the Couch. We value your feedback. Please consider leaving us a review on Podbean, iTunes, or your preferred podcast listening app.
You can reach us on Facebook by searching at A View from the Couch, on Twitter at View_Couch, or by emailing us at aviewfromthecouch@yahoo.com. Thanks again for listening. Bye.
See ya.